Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hello and welcome to this week's Castrol Motorsport News Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Van Leeuwen, and here's what's making news this week. Scott McLaughlin is an IndyCar race winner. The three-time Supercars champ started from pole and, despite having to navigate some lap traffic late in the race, held off Alex Palou to win the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. Rhianna Cream will be back on our TV screens this year. After being axed from the Supercars coverage last year, she has been named as a pit reporter for the 2022 season in place of Charlie Robinson, who is stepping down for personal reasons. That's the only really big change in the TV lineup, which will once again be led by Jesse Yates, Mark Scaife, and Neil Crompton. As we foreshadowed last week, Scott Pye has a new backup for the 2022 Supercars season. Watch brand Seiko replaces DeWalt on his Team 18 entry. Premier Racing had its first test cut short by poor weather at Queensland Raceway last week, which means it will head to its first Supercars round this weekend in Sydney with just a shakedown under its belt. And there were 37 cars on the grid for the opening round of the Australian Formula Ford Series on the weekend, which is pretty impressive. Jordan Sinney won the round with two race victories, and the other race win went to Cody Donald. Now, joining me this week to discuss all that and much more is a teammate who I would never even consider running into the wall at Auto Club Speedway, Stefan Bartholomaeus. Stefan, how on earth are you this week?
It's always a pleasure to speak with you, Andrew. You find me in Melbourne this week. I'm here doing some work at V8 Sleuth headquarters.
Oh, wow.
As you know, I live on the Gold Coast, so it's an unusual time to be away from home. But obviously, our thoughts are with everyone dealing with the flooding in Queensland and New South Wales while we're here chatting about the relatively unimportant world of motor racing.
It does feel a bit unimportant this week with what's going on around the world, and I totally agree. I hope all of our listeners in any areas affected by the floods are hanging in there and going okay. But the show must go on in the motor racing world to some extent, and it's pretty hard to go past Scotty Mack's breakthrough IndyCar win as our headline news this week. Stefan, from the way he's talking and clearly the way he's driving, you know, the way he won that race, it feels like, you know, our former champion, he's really got his head around IndyCar now. He's arrived as an IndyCar driver. What do you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely. It was an incredible result. I don't think too many people saw it coming. He had a pretty solid first year last year, but this was a massive jump. The pole lap he did on Saturday felt like something brand new to see him get a pole in IndyCar, but we'd seen that trick before when he goes out and does one lap at the end of the session and trumps everyone. But then in the race, he was just faultless. Like, not only did he have the speed, but he controlled the start. His time management was really good, fuel save. You know, and as you mentioned at the top, like, he had to withstand a lot of pressure there at the end with some lap traffic involved as well. So the only thing he really messed up all weekend was when he jumped out of the car and fell on his ass.
Yep, bit of a sort of back somersault or something like that. I don't know what the technical gymnastics term would be. But anyway, I grabbed David Mauscher Lopez, who's one of the top journos in the IndyCar paddock, for a chat about this exciting start to the IndyCar season. Well, from an Aussie perspective and Kiwi perspective, an exciting start to the IndyCar season. And I started out by asking him what the US reaction for McLaughlin's first win has been.
The local reaction, I think, is that everyone's been massively impressed. You know, you'd think that there might be this kind of like, not a resentment, but a kind of feeling of, he drives for Penske. Of course, he's going to win eventually. I think people have appreciated that it's just such a massive step to go from supercars to open wheel. So there's that element to it. I think there's also an element to it that, wow, what's changed since last year? Because I'd say last year's street courses were the courses that he struggled most with. You know, there were definitely days where he was absolutely furious with himself because he'd be struggling to keep up with Will Power and Joseph Newgarden. And this year, there's none of that. You know, I mean, if he had just topped practice and then finished up sixth on the grid, everyone would have been praising him. But the fact that he was a contender for pole and took it and beat Will to a pole, you know, I mean, I think people do reckon that that is a huge deal. And then the fact that he then remained very composed under pressure from Alex Palou, the reigning champion, in the final stint of the race, and that he had also been able to save fuel and look after his softer compound tyres. He looked like the complete package. Now, obviously, that's a pretty tough thing to define in IndyCar because a complete package means you're also good at ovals and road courses. But, you know, he looked pretty good on ovals last year, second place at Texas, fourth place at Gateway. So we reckon he's got that now. So, like, the next challenge is, like, see him on the natural terrain road course. Has he made the same leap there? I definitely think that there's by the end of the race, there was definitely a feeling that, hey, this isn't just a one-off. This isn't just one a guy having one of those, you know, his day of days. That he just answered so many challenges and came up trumps and got the job done. So, and I think psychologically, it's also a massive threshold for him to break through in that he now knows he can do it. And you know what he's like. He's cocky, confident, call it what you will. But once he's got that confidence in him, he becomes more formidable. So I reckon we're going to see another win or two from him this year.
He's a ruthless winner. We saw that in supercars, no doubt about it. I mean, you touched on his form on ovals and road courses. We saw him finish second on an oval last season. So we know he is capable of getting a result on that style of track. I mean,
yeah.
Could we see him challenging for the title this year, or am I getting carried away with the round one race win hype?
Honestly, I don't think so, because I think he has the right mentality. You know, last year, everyone was just astounded that Alex Palou finished on the podium in half the races in a series that's just so ridiculously compact. Like, I think there's 21 cars covered by 1 second in qualifying. Or certainly in practice when everyone was on the same tyres. So to be able to achieve that consistency, for me, Alex Palou kind of like wrote the book of how to win a championship. 3 wins, 5 other podiums, and, you know, really strong top fives. I think his average finish was 7. And funnily enough, McLaughlin said he came into the weekend, him and his new engineer, Ben Bretsman, saying they wanted the top 7 because they're figuring that, you know, a 7th place, if that's the average, that's how Palou won the title last year. Yeah, that's what we need to aim for, always being 7th or better. And but then, you know, obviously after getting pole position, their parameters somewhat shifted. I mean, I guess the shorter answer to your question is, I think we need to see him on each of the different types of circuit. Iowa is going to be completely new to him, and that's a short oval, and it's a bumpy short oval. It's a real tough nut to crack because it's almost like a street course set up on an oval. So he's got to deal with that, and that's a double header, so that's going to be a lot of points available there. And then we need to see how he does in the double points in the 500. But aside from that, yeah, I mean, I don't have many misgivings. I think he will be top 5 in the championship this year. I wouldn't definitely nail him to the kind of like champion position just yet, but I think he's a contender.
Moving on from Scotty Mac, there was a classic Will Power rant in the press conference at the, I think a couple of press conferences over the weekend about there being no blue flags in IndyCar. I didn't actually know that, and I find it kind of staggering that lap cars can just sort of wobble around in the way without actually falling on the wrong side of the rule book. Why is the car? I mean, that's weird, right? That there's no blue flag rules in particularly on street tracks and road courses.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a throwback to the days when there used to be a lot of yellow flags, you know, whereas this year, you know, we look at St. Pete and there's only one blue flag, despite there being six rookies in the field. You know, you just end up expecting there to be caution periods. And basically, drivers are allowed to fight to stay on the lead lap so that when a caution comes out, they cycle to the, you know, they get back, you know, to the tail end of the lead pack because everyone's bunched together. And obviously at ovals, that used to be less of a deal because you could, you know, if you're fast enough, you could unlap yourself from the leaders fairly simply. I don't know how they would legitimize, how they would justify the fact that drivers are allowed to do this. But it can and does regularly interfere with the lead battle, you know. And then you also have a hopeless and completely unwinnable argument of if you're coming up to lap a tail ender who's a teammate of the guy that you're battling with, you know, that driver can then make it very hard and back you up into your pursuer to help his teammate. And you can never prove intention, right? You can only prove fact. So someone could say, oh no, he just caught me at the wrong place. And in fact, he's deliberately backing the leader up into his pursuing teammate. So it is a ludicrous rule. I'm 100% with Power on a lot of things. And this is one of them. It is stupid, especially when he's come up with what I think is completely legitimate remedy, which is to, if in the event of a caution flag, everyone gets a lap back so that they won't fight you then for the lead because they know they're going to get a wave around and go around to the back of the pack anyway. And then they stop interfering with the lead battle. It's such a simple solution, but my worry is that Will's banged the drum for so long that people have grown deaf to his request, or, you know, if a bunch of the drivers, and he reckons all but one of the drivers have agreed to this rule, then that looks like, you know, people power has pressured the governing body into making this change. And I think there's too many egos involved at the top of the sport to let that happen, to be seen as pushovers or capitulating to the masses. But it's frankly ridiculous, and it's so easily solved, as Power pointed out.
And thanks to David for his time there. You can check out his brilliant IndyCar coverage across the Motorsport Network platforms like motorsport.com and autosport.com. Stefan, let's take a look at what's happening a bit closer to home, and it's race week for supercars. Finally, we're going to see supercars racing around Sydney Motorsport Park. I mean, it's been a while. I've forgotten completely what that looks like. I guess we should probably give the new season a bit of a preview. So I'm just going to chuck a couple of questions at you, and then maybe we can run through our top 10 predictions for the year. I'll start with a fairly straightforward question. Who's going to be our champion this year?
Well, assuming we only have one event at Sydney Motorsport Park, which is a big leap, I know, I can't go past Shane Van Gisbergen to be the champion. He was so far ahead of everyone else for most of 2021 that he probably has to start favourite. He was quick everywhere last year. The car was reliable. And as a driver, I think he's at the peak of his powers. But it's certainly not as safe a bet as it might sound on first listen. because of those big changes that are going on at Triple Eight. I mean, there's been a lot of attention on the fact that Jamie Wincup has retired from full-time driving and replaced Roland Dane as team principal there. But for me, the key is how Andrew Edwards settles into that race engineer role on the 97 car. Shane has had engineer changes before and had instant success while at Triple Eight, but that's been with guys already in the Triple Eight system. And it's a very different place to Brad Jones Racing, where Andrew Edwards has been engineering Nick Percat. So how he fits into that Triple Eight ecosystem, I think, is going to be critical. And if you look at some of the other rivals, they've got a bit more stability on their side. But as much as that's a big question mark, I still can't go past Shane as a champion. What about yourself?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be Shane. I take your point about, you know, obviously the changes there, big changes. I think certainly at the top end of town in terms of, you know, Jamie Wincup now being the boss, that's going to be, it's going to be critical how that plays out. I can see Andrew Edwards sort of slotting into that role fairly seamlessly, just because he does have so much experience in the category, and Shane's got so much experience in the category, and Shane has a fairly good engineering understanding. So I think, you know, if we were jumping straight into a Gen 3 situation, maybe there'd be more question marks. But I actually sort of feel like that relationship could work fairly well. And again, you know, we'll talk about this in a minute. I think there is going to be, there are rivals out there that are going to be able to challenge Shane, but it's just so hard not to name him as the champion, because as you said, he was just so good last year, and he really is just at the absolute peak of his powers. And it will take a huge effort from somebody to get on top of him this season. If someone's going to do it, who do you think it could be, Stefan? Who out there could really push Shane the hardest this year?
I think that next group of challengers, which is Anton Di Pasquale, Chaz Mostert and Cam Waters, are all pretty close. Like, it wouldn't be a total surprise for Anton or Chaz to win the title. But for me, I think Anton now in the second year at Dick Johnson Racing, he's got that relationship with Ludo down pat. They really came out after that break and were much improved. Clearly, City Motorsport Park suits their package, but they really seem to have made the most of that break in the season last year and were strong in the back end. So I would expect them to really go on with it, and they've just got to make sure they're there every week and not have the DNFs like they had last year, which really cost them.
Yeah, I think, to me, Chaz Mostert is the really big chance. You know, I think he could really be a title contender this year. I've spoken to multiple technical personnel and drivers at other teams who, you know, their eyes were opened in a pretty dramatic way by his pace at Bathurst last year, and they feel that that was genuine pace. There's always somewhere like Sydney Motorsport Park. You know, we saw the DJRs and the Erebus and these guys having a lot of good form there, which you can maybe put down to some of the unique traits of that track. Not to say Bathurst doesn't have any unique traits, but just the margin was so incredible that I think some guys are going, well, this guy could really be in the hunt this year. So I think that he's the guy who could really push Shane the hardest and very well may end up winning the championship. I guess Anton and Cam Waters are the other two that you might sort of put in that. Where are they going to fit in? For the exact reasons that you just touched on with Anton in terms of second year at DJR, we saw him finally hit some form. He seemed to at least maybe gain an understanding of how to get the most out of a Ludo car at Sydney Motorsport Park. So, you know, it could very well be. This is a big year for Anton, I think, to really show that he's in that absolute top group, that he is a Shane. He is, you know, as good as a Scotty Mack. He is as good as a Chaz. This is his big chance to prove that this year. Have they got the consistency? That's probably the question mark for me. And exactly the same goes for Cam Waters. We saw Cam, you know, there were times last year where he looked by far the, you know, that was the second best car and driver package in the field, and then it tailed off pretty badly, particularly at Sydney Motorsport Park. So I think consistency is the big question mark for both DJR and Tickford Racing. Who's under the most pressure in 2022, do you think, Stefan?
For me, it's Walkinshaw Andretti United as a team, really. Like, everyone in that team is under pressure to perform, and that sounds negative, but it's kind of not, because they've earned this pressure. They've built up over the last few years to now where it looks like they are a full-blown, genuine title contender. Obviously, they ended 2021 with the Bathurst win and adding Nick Percat and Jeff Slater into that mix should only make the team stronger. It's the third year of Chaz and Adam DeBore there, so they should be contending for the title. But that pressure is on to be consistent every week, which is something that they've lacked. We know what they're capable of on a good day, but they need to bring that every time. And a slow start at Sydney Mosville Park would be a massive letdown after what they did at Bathurst last year.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about a slow. Like, I think it's really important if we look at where sort of Triple Eight was sitting in the pecking order at Sydney Motorsport Park, it'd be nice to see Chaz or Anton or someone actually get the better of Shane there, just going off topic slightly, to kind of – because if Triple Eight go there and Shane grinds out a race win or two, then you sort of go, wow, it's going to get hard for everyone else from here. I think coming back to who's under the most pressure, I'll stick with the Walkinshaw theme because I think that, you know, I think it's Nick Percat. And I've mentioned this before, but, you know, he's made the decision, the admirable decision, to leave the calm, safe waters of Brad Jones Racing and deliberately put himself under pressure by matching up at Walkinshaw's against Mostert, you know. So I think he's under pressure, but it's a pressure he's put on himself, almost the same as what you're talking about with the team. I mean, Mostert is probably going to be a title contender this year, and that's a big test for Nick to try and match him. But I rate him for taking that chance and for basically sort of staking his career on matching one of the best in the business. And, you know, he's made that call. He went out of his way to do that. So that's something to be admired, but it's really going to be something fascinating to watch. All right, let's get into some tips. Run me through your championship top 10.
Well, as I said before, I've gone with Shane Van Gisbergen for the title, and then Anton DiPasquale, Chaz Mostert, Cam Waters, Nick Percat, Will Brown, Will Davison, Brody Kostecki, Brock Feeney, and Tim Slade in 10th.
I think we've actually got the exact same 10 draw. Okay, so here's mine. So again, Shane Van Gisbergen. I've got Chaz Mostert in 2nd instead of Anton. I've got Anton in 3rd, Nick Percat, Cam Waters, Will Brown, Brody Kostecki, Will Davison, Tim Slade, and Brock Feeney. Is that the exact same 10 drivers?
Just in slightly different positions? Yep.
The
interesting one there for me is I found Brock Feeney really hard to place, and we've ended up with him in a pretty similar sort of position there. I've got him 9th and you've got him 10th.
Yeah,
I mean, on a good day, I think he'll be at the front, but geez, it's hard for a rookie, isn't it, to be there all the time?
I didn't actually find it that hard to place him at all. I feel like that's exactly where he's kind of going to end up. You're right. He's going to be at the front. We saw at Bathurst. I mean, I know he shunted out of the race, but he looked like a guy capable of running. He looked like a guy comfortable running in that front group. And you can clean up the crashes, but you can't make someone a heap faster. So I sort of feel like he's going to have a season very similar to Jamie Winkup's first season as Triple Eight driver. That's what I think, and that's where I kind of landed on him sitting in about that 10th, because he'll have some really good days and he'll have some not so good days, and, you know, that's going to be a challenge for him because there's a lot of expectation as a Triple Eight driver. But this is the main game in supercars, and he really had everything going his way in Super 2, and he's not always going to have everything going his way in the main game, so there's going to be some tough days. But he'll have good ones as well, and that's where he'll end up in that 10th spot. So for me, I think that was a fairly comfortable one for me. Probably I found Slady maybe a tougher one to sort of commit to the top 10 just because of the fact that team's going to have some disadvantages in terms of its pit order and stops and that sort of stuff, particularly at the refueling races. But you made a really good point about, you know, the technical package and how strong that could be, and that kind of got him over the line for me. Who just missed out on the top 10 for you?
Well, I guess for both of us, it's going to be the same sort of teams, like Grove Racing, the Team 18 guys, and BJR, which is probably going to be led by Andre Heimgartner this year. They're sort of all – they'd all want to be in the top 10, but they've got to knock out some quality driver and car combos to do it. And Groves, I mean, they're obviously spending some money. You know, they've got David Couchy on board across from Triple Eight, and got a bit of an engine tie-up now with Walkinshaw's, but they're coming from a fair way back, and it's hard to see that it'll be much different than what we've had there with sort of flashes of some speed, but pretty inconsistent.
Yeah, massive inconsistency. And we've seen with Walkinshaw's that you can go on the biggest hiring spree in the world, but it still takes time, you know, and it will yield results eventually, but not necessarily straight away. So that's why I've got both, you know, I've got, you know, Dave Reynolds and Lee Holdsworth, not a long way out of the top 10, but just out of the top 10. I sort of think that, you know, and Nick Percat was such an asset to Brad Jones Racing in terms of you just knew he was going to find himself in the top 10 in the points, and whether Andre is going to be at that level straight away, I'm not 100% sure, so I've sort of got him sitting about the 12th. So, yeah, there's a few interesting things to shake out, but that block behind the top 10 is so difficult because you could have someone in 20th that might finish 11th or 9th or whatever. Like, it's tough, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That whole 10 through 20 is probably harder to predict than 1 through 10 in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, neither of us had Cam Waters as our champion, but I know for a fact that he wants to prove us wrong, and I know that because I spoke to him about his chances this season. I started off by asking him how he was feeling heading into the 2022 campaign.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get into the season. It's been a pretty interesting off-season for me, a lot different to the previous years. And, you know, we had an up and down year last year, but I'm pretty confident that we've taken a few steps forward in the off-season.
Let's just like reflect on 2021 a little bit. Given how strong your form was at the end of 2020, you know, we all thought that you'd really make a big title push last year. It kind of didn't happen. There was some bad luck along the way, particularly right at the start of the season. There was a bit of inconsistency sort of around Sydney. Was it a bit disappointing? Like, how did you feel? Or am I being way too harsh in calling it that when you know, you had some wins and you had some good results as well?
I guess it was a little disappointing in the end, but we were probably the second best car for a lot of the year until we went to SMP, and we just had a bit of bad luck through the year, which, you know, put us on the back foot. But, I think we were probably the second best car until SMP, and then, everyone wrote us off after SMP. So, I think we probably weren't ready, to be honest, to go after a complete title to be consistent at every single track, and that's probably something that we're focused on in the off-season. So hopefully we've tick a few of those boxes and we can, be strong in, every single track, not just, the different strong tracks.
Yeah, I mean, we know that when you've got the car under you, you can win. Do you feel that you have got some direction on how to have that car more consistently, and like at Sydney Motorsport Park in particular, given we're going back there? I mean, you seem to think from memory you were sort of starting to find some form towards the end of the Sydney swing last year. Do you feel that you might have unlocked what you need to do to get some results there this weekend?
I definitely feel more confident. We've had a really good off-season. We had a really good test day, and I think that kind of answered a few of our questions that we had. Why we struggle at SMP. So, we'll have to go there and we have to see if we have turned the corner or not. And I think if we have, then, we're definitely in for a good shot this year.
How's the atmosphere heading into the new campaign? There's a couple of fresh faces in Jake Kostecki and Tommy Randall, although Tommy's been around the Tikwa Trats for a long time. Does it kind of bring some fresh perspective to the team when there's new faces hanging around?
Yeah, the vibe's really cool at the moment in the Tikwa. I think everyone was really hanging for a break at the end of the year. The four SMPs really burnt everyone out. And then, Bathurst always wrecks you. So, the off-season's been great. Everyone's, had a bit of a break, and everyone's on the same page now. And, you touched on having the new guys rock up with Thomas and Jake, and they're very energetic and excited to get into the year. And, it's probably helped lift the place a little bit more than what it already was.
Is there sort of a sense that, hopefully, fingers crossed, touch wood, all that sort of stuff, we might have a bit of normality in terms of travel and that sort of stuff and not being stuck on the road for a long time? Is there a bit of relief that we're sort of facing that as opposed to just the constant question marks over the past 2 years?
Yeah, I think everyone's pretty excited to not have to go away and race on the road like we did last few years. But, fingers crossed that's all behind us and, there's not a new variant or something stupid happen and the governments lock us out again. But, fingers crossed we've got a normal season ahead of us and we can just, focus on the next race, which is planned, and it'll be a bit more normal.
Would definitely be nice. Now, you know, I think we can safely assume that Giz is going to be a title contender this year. Who else do you see as guys that are going to be in the fight? Like, obviously, yep, you're going to be there. Anton, Chaz, the Erebus guys, who are you sort of looking over your shoulder and going, this guy could kind of could be in the fight this year?
I think Shane obviously will be up there. Chaz, I think, will definitely be competitive. I think they're probably going to step it up again this year. I'll probably put Shane and Chaz the main competition at the moment, I think.
Yep.
DJR, they're probably still a little bit up and down. Last year, they were up and down at times. But, you know, definitely had the tracks that I was super strong at. So, to me, they probably need to fix that. Kind of like us with our tracks that we were up and down at. But, yeah, they're probably the main two. Plus, maybe Anton. I think the Erebus guys are probably still a little bit young. I think, you know, they've been pumped up a little bit just after the SMP form they had. But, yeah, they're definitely going to keep improving as well. So it's going to be a pretty tough year for sure. There's probably six guys that can have a shot at it, but there's probably, you know, two or three, maybe four, realistically, that can win it.
Now, before I let you go, you've spent the summer sliding around in a sprint car. I was actually down at Kwinana Motorflex for the first time in years last week, and, geez, those things just look wild to drive. What's it like in the driver's seat trying to wheel, I don't know, what is it, 800 horsepower, 900 horsepower around a dirt track?
They're wild. That's the easiest way to put it. So much fun to drive. You have so much horsepower. They're light. They make so much grip with the wing and the big tyres. And, you know, things happen so quick, but you have to be super smooth in them, which, you know, it's actually pretty challenging with how rough the track is at times and everything. So it's really good as a race car driver to drive something that challenges you so much. And,
yeah.
And you know, just to be, you know, up on the wheel of one of those things, but then having to remain calm, pull a tear off, have someone slide, job you, think about where your wing is, all those things just makes you a better race car driver. So, it's been a very interesting off season for me. You know, I've been absolutely flat out. I think I've done 14 or 15 shows this year.
Wow.
Which has been crazy, but I feel, you know, really sharp, and hopefully it'll help me this year with the supercars.
Well, if it rains in Sydney this weekend, some recent experience of going sideways might come in pretty handy. Best of luck for the opener.
It's probably if that's more when, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's how it's looking. Well, hopefully we're doing some racing at all. That's all I want to see, just some racing. Even if it's raining, let's go racing.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, man.
Some interesting insight from Cam on a few of his rivals there, and we thank him for his time. Now, let's take a look at what is happening around the world. Kyle Larson took victory in NASCAR's Fontana race, although for a second week running there was some friendly fire between teammates. This time it was Larson hitting Hendrick teammate Chase Elliott while battling for the lead. Alfa Romeo has unveiled a pretty hot-looking livery for its C42 Formula One car ahead of the new season. Mercedes ended the first test in Spain on top while porpoising, where cars basically start bouncing up and down from about 320 kilometres an hour onwards, which must be a heap of fun in the driver's seat, was the buzzword of our first week of testing. Toyota driver Kalle Rovanperä took a comfortable win at a snowy rally Sweden. The Finn now leads the WRC standings over Thierry Neuville. In related news, Rally Sweden is here to stay for at least the next couple of years thanks to a new deal with the WRC that runs until 2024. They actually moved that event north this year to try and find a bit more snow after a couple of sort of more muddy rather than snowy years. And former supercars driver, speaking of snow and ice and that sort of stuff, Simona Di Silvestro has set her sights on the Winter Olympics. She's taken up the bobsleigh, which she feels is her best shot at Olympic glory thanks to her background in motor racing. She finished fifth in the monobob class at the Swiss Championships on the weekend at St. Moritz. That was her first outing in a bobsleigh. So that's a pretty wild career shift there. Stefan, I think it's time that we stick our mitt into the Castrol mailbag and see what we pull out. This week's listener letter comes from Justin Olden. He wants to know if IndyCar could be a legitimate pathway to Formula One rather than Formula 3 and Formula 2? That's a very interesting question. I think that the answer is yes, although not necessarily in the place of F3 and F2. Like perhaps it's sort of somewhere to go after F2 if there's no space in Formula 1, and we've seen that this year with Oscar Piastri, how quickly you can kind of rise through the ranks and not necessarily find any room at the Formula 1 in. We've seen Alex Palou. He started his career in Europe. He went to Japan and then he decided that IndyCar was the best place for his career progression, and that's obviously going pretty well, and he could make a play for Formula 1 if he wanted to. There's a lot of talk that Pato O'Ward is next in line for a McLaren F1 seat when one becomes available. So, you know, we could see that pathway actually coming to life sooner rather than later. And IndyCar is definitely in a, you know, it's on the, not a growth phase because it's always been a big championship, but it's sort of, it's on the rise in terms of its popularity at the moment. And I think it is a good place for drivers to get miles and get exposure and have a bit of fun as well, because it seems like the guys enjoy racing in that series. Stefan, what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, I think we've seen with Scotty McLaughlin that the right driver can come into a top series from anywhere, provided that the pathway is there and the driver's good enough and they're in the right environment. It's clearly Scotty, the Penske thing made that happen from supercars to IndyCar. So as you say, if you look at IndyCar to F1, someone like Pato O'Ward, who has that McLaren tie, you could totally see him doing it and having a fair crack at it if he gets that F1 chance. But it's still going to be the exception rather than the rule, right? Like, to get to F1, most of these young drivers are in a driver program, whether it be Red Bull or Mercedes or Alpine. And yeah, I just feel like the chances are they're going to be placed in that European system on the way up. So it's certainly going to be possible to get from IndyCar to F1, but I don't think it's going to be replacing F2 as the premier feeder series.
No. I think it becomes an alternative slash. What it becomes is an alternative to Formula One when you come out of that European Junior Series that isn't necessarily the end of your F1 dream, you know? Whereas if you head down a sports car path or something like that, generally that's sort of like, okay, well, the open wheel of things done. So it probably becomes an alternative that leaves the option of still, you know, going Formula One racing up your sleeve. And the other thing is that, you know, drivers tend to be racing IndyCar a bit longer. You don't have to. There's not this focus on youth and that sort of stuff. So, you know, I think there's IndyCar drivers that sort of, there's particularly a younger crop of IndyCar drivers right now that sort of feel like, hey, I could go to Europe and have a crack at F1 and I could give it 2 or 3 years, and if it doesn't work out, I can still come back and race IndyCars for another 15 years. So it's certainly got a role to play in the international pathway, or, you know, maybe it just becomes, you know, an alternative as opposed to sort of an actual part of the pathway. All right, let's get into our Castrol Stars of the Week. I'm going to go first this week, Stefan, because I'm going to take the very easy option and pick Scott McLaughlin. We know that he can put in those polished race-winning drives at the top level of motor racing. We've seen him do it time and time and time and time again in supercars, but it was still really exciting to see him do it so early in his IndyCar career. Early in his career, but at a fairly critical point as well, because, you know, you're not going to get a million and one chances of getting it right at the top level. Even Roger Penske at some point is going to say, right, we need to, if this isn't working. And there were times last year where it was tough for him, but he's turned it around. And as I said at the top of the show, he really looks like he's arrived in the series. And, you know, we've heard from an expert that he could genuinely be in the title hunt this year, which is all pretty exciting. Who have you got for your star, Stefan?
Well, I'm going to go with Matthew Brabham, who won the Indy Lights race at St. Pete. Arguably, he picked a bad weekend to win, considering he got totally overshadowed by Scotty's performance. But it was still an incredible result for Matt, who is back in Indy Lights for the first time since 2015. A few things fell his way in the race. Hunter McElroy crashed out of the lead, and then Matty's teammate ran out of fuel with 2 laps to go, so there was a bit of fortune in there, but it was still a great reward for a young guy who is still desperate to get to IndyCar, despite the fact that a lot of the others trying to get there are a bit younger than he is these days.
Well, if you want to talk about being overshadowed, I think the Scott Pyle livery was sent out about 10 minutes before Scotty Mac crossed the line to win that race, so probably didn't do the...
any sponsor announcement should have had good timing, it should have been that one. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, that didn't necessarily go fantastic, but there you go. Well, look, I think that's it for this week. Remember to like, subscribe and review our work wherever you listen to your podcasts, and we'll be back next week to review our first Supercars race of the season on the Castrol Motorsport News podcast.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt or in speedway or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.